Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Our legacy isn't how many commas we have in our bank account. It's who we're lucky enough to have in our lives and what we can leave them with.
Henry, remind me again why we can't put you in a gifted school.
Because it's better for my psychosocial development for me to interact with a peer group in a normal school environment.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Susan? I guess I could just set you up with direct deposit if that's easier.
I don't know. We'll have to ask Henry.
You have to ask your 11-year-old?
Did our financial statement come in the mail today?
Yeah. I forgot to give it to you.
I don't know how you do it all by yourself.
Come on, I have Henry. Find me another male of the species who's more grown up than him.
I'd like to.
This story, it's about me, my brother, my mom, and the girl who lived next door.
Henry and Peter, they're lucky to have you.
And your father's lucky to have you too.
Stepfather.
Hello and welcome along to our Patreon pals. After, at your request and mercy, myself, Guy Montgomery, and my esteemed friend, Tim Batt, have watched a movie called The Book of Henry. But don't be mistaken, it's not a book. It was a movie. Tim, good morning. How are you?
Hey, pal, point of clarification. Is the movie The Book of Henry or Book of Henry? This is very important to me.
I believe it's The Book of Henry. But
oh, fucking blow me down.
I could be wrong.
I'm going to check that. You keep talking, I'm going to check
I have checked. I'm checking
this
it.
This is imperative.
It says here, The Book of Henry.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Now, I've just watched this movie, Tim.
Yes.
And
I watched it yesterday.
Yes.
I slept on it.
I have to tell you something. So I was in communication with you yesterday, and I was saying, I sort of sent you a trailer for a movie called Tiptoes, which someone told me about after I'd watched Detective Pikachu. They were telling me we'd gotten quite stoned and watched Detective Pikachu, and on the drive home after the movie, he was telling me about how there's a movie called Tiptoes in which Gary Oldman plays a little person, and
yes, he does.
Matthew McConaughey. It's the whole thing is just so far-fetched. It's McConaughey and Kate Beckinsale as love interests. And I think it's, I can't remember if it's Kate or McConaughey whose parents are little people. And it's like this big reveal and the families have to meet each other. And Peter Dinklage is in it. It sounds like it's make-believe, but it's true.
And features Gary Oldman, from memory of me watching the trailer a couple months ago, in the role of a lifetime.
Yeah, that's what they say. And honestly, if you look it up, there's a lot of like movie blogs, which, you know, he features on lists of people saying outstanding performance in a failed film for what he did. And anyhow, that's all by the by. So amongst all that communication, we were talking about The Book of Henry, and you sent me a link to download the film.
Well, let's not reveal all our tricks, shall we?
No, it's necessary that we reveal all of our tricks. And I saw on the, when I opened up the Dropbox link and started, you know, and it was just to checking out that it worked. It had a runtime of an hour. And I messaged you and I said, wow, a runtime of an hour? What merciful Patreon pals. And then you sort of said something else like, oh, yeah, I'm watching it now. And life went on. And then so today I was out and about. I was getting my bike fixed. And they were taking longer than I thought. So I thought I better just start watching this movie now. and I sat down. I was out in the world, and I sat down and started watching this movie on my phone. And mm-hmm. I saw the opening title sequence, and I saw all of these names like Cate Blanchett and Sarah Silverman, Bobby Moynihan, amongst other probably more esteemed actors, but not who I necessarily know. And I thought, wow, this is an incredible cast. And the opening credit sequence, I was like, this is a pretty good opening credit sequence. This movie knows sure. what it is and what it's trying to do.
Yeah,
I thought something must have gone really awry for a movie with this title, opening sequence, and this cast to have been condensed down to an hour-long runtime. And then I started watching the movie, and I was like, wow, for a movie that only lasts an hour, these guys are super confident with their pacing. They're in no rush to get through the beats of the story. And then about 40 minutes in, after we were introduced to a subplot in which the next-door neighbor, who's the police inspector or a police commissioner, is, under... There's suspicion that he might be in an abusive relationship with his stepdaughter. And,
Played by Hank from Breaking Bad. Put that fella in your head, everyone.
There you go. And Henry, 40 minutes in, while this subplot has just been introduced, Henry is diagnosed with a malignant tumor and is killed off about 45 minutes into the movie. And I was thinking, Jesus Christ, we've got a lot of resolution to smash into 15 minutes of screen time here. And
movies aren't ever an hour. Like, there's no, I know, that's not even I know. The length of any film.
I know, but these Patreon pals, they throw some pretty weird shit at us, you know. My mind harkens back to the Street Kids, whoever that YouTube video was, where there was that crazy that Christmas animation.
But yeah, I was even really, that was like 90 minutes.
No, it wasn't. And also there was the other, that Christmas film, but I was really confused. And it wasn't until 58 minutes in I realized something's not right here, and I walked home while watching the movie, and I downloaded the file. It's an hour and 45 minutes of movie.
Yes, it is.
And this is one of the few times when I was watching a movie and keeping an eye on the runtime, and I was like, we're running out of space here. Like, I was devastated to see that the movie was going to end, because I was genuinely invested in the characters and wanted to see what happened. Mm-hmm. I've watched an hour of this movie, and now we're on the call. But that was one of the most confusing and, like, I was, like, really dumbfounded as to how they were going to make all of this work in the hour. It was a hell
God
of an hour.
Damn it, Monty. We've got to be better than this. Fucking
do
rolling
we?
Here having watched half the Yeah, I think so.
It's an hour and 45 minutes. I've watched more than half the movie. Thank you very
all
much.
All right. Should I then explain what happens in the second half to you?
I
guess it's got to come out at some point anyway.
No, I would sooner you didn't. I want to watch the other 45 minutes of this movie
well,
for
what
pleasure.
What are we doing then? What are we doing here?
There's an hour of great movie to unpack.
No, you shit. I'm not going to not talk about the ending.
Okay, but no spoilers.
I will definitely spoil it. I don't know how I couldn't. I don't know how I could talk about the ending without spoiling it.
We were exchanging some messages yesterday, like in between you watching the film, and you were stressed out by the movie. You were speculating that the lead character was an alien.
Yeah, and, that was.
In reference
I
to
did
what
think we- that. I thought yeah. it was. I thought it was going to get K-Pax on us because he's freaking out. He starts getting these heather. Okay, so Henry, boy genius, 12 years old. We open with a lot of Rube Goldberg machine type things that he's created in his effectively his treehouse, even though it's on ground level. And this kid's he's a dynamo. Not enough attention is paid to this in the film, but he is trading stocks, something chronic. And he's doing so with such proficiency that he's managed to amass a nest egg of $800,000, which he leaves for his mother after he carks it.
$660,000.
Oh, I beg your pardon, sorry. So he's a boy wonder, he's a kid genius, and he's got a younger brother who's like a couple or 3 years younger than him. And he's very like moralistic in addition to being very smart. But here's the thing about Henry, you guys, he is utterly insufferable as a character. Like, despite the fact that he is supposed to be the emotional core of this film, Yeah, I stand behind that. He's, you know, you put a kid in there, you put a 12-year-old kid, you're supposed to love them, especially one who's going through health problems, especially one who's very cares about other people, very empathetic. And yet this kid, I want to fucking kick him in the head every time he's on screen because he's so precocious. He's telling his mum off for swearing all the time in front of the younger kid, the single parent who's doing her best, working in a diner alongside Sarah Silverman, just trying to put the coins together to get food on the table. And this kid's fucking giving her shit for playing video games, blowing off a little steam at home, and for swearing lightly, I might add, no C words, I don't think there were any F-bombs either, in front of the other kid. Get fucked, Henry. Go fuck absolutely. Yourself.
Hey, why don't you go fuck yourself? Henry's doing his best.
Man. Henry's a precocious little shit.
I liked Henry. I thought the kid who was playing him did. There were shades of a young Tobey Maguire, I thought.
Yeah, and so the kid.
He's quite freaky. What's he been in?
He's been in It. He's the main kid in It. His name's Jaden Martell, which I think is a stage name. Yeah, and he's, you know, he's all good. It's a hard character. I'm not putting it on the actor at all, but the script writing, it's just like, man, I want to boot that little kid. I want to give him a kick.
I disagree. I thought the little kid was great. If you want to talk about who should be booted, it's the great Sarah Silverman. And as you can imagine, in this sort of truncated hour-long version of the movie, when he's in the hospital and she comes and visits him and they confess that they actually get along even though they have like a surface-level, mean-spirited relationship. And he says, I think you're pretty. And then she gives him what is very much a sexualized kiss.
Yeah.
I was like,
I would estimate her character to be 35 at least.
It's like,
and
we
he
cannot
is 12.
Be introducing... You know, these...
Sorry, he's 11.
Going on 12, yeah. I was like, they were just stuffing so much new stuff into the movie when there was under 15 minutes to go. I was really fascinated to see how it all played out.
Guy. That freight train of adding ingredients to mix two completely different metaphors, that never stopped.
It keeps just more and more.
There was a, because, yeah, this was one of those movies where you feel like you're watching multiple different movies within a movie, because it opens up and you get a real sort of Disney vibe, because there's a whole raft of, especially from the 90s, Disney's flicks where and John Hughes kind of dabbled in this with Home Alone as well, where kids are fucking awesome, adults are stupid, and let's have a rollicking good time exploiting that as a premise. And this is sort of like that, except I hated the kid. I was like, the kid is smart, but I hate him because he's precocious. He needs to chill out. So I didn't like anyone in this, except Naomi Watts, who I always like. And I think she is underappreciated for how good an actor she is. I think she's a victim of how beautiful she is, to be honest. And then she was in like Kong, so everyone just sort of put her in their head as like the damsel in distress type. She's a fine actor.
No, she gets hers. Kate Blanchett is critically and commercially successful and revered.
Naomi Watts we're talking about, not Kate Blanchett. Kate Blanchett is neither in this movie nor Kong.
funnily enough, I get them confused. But Naomi Watts also, I think she also gets hers, doesn't she?
I hope so.
She does well, but... Oh, yeah, it's so interesting. I genuinely think because I watched this whole... Well, not this whole movie. Because I watched this whole hour of movie under the belief that something had gone catastrophically wrong and they'd had to cut it down to an hour and it didn't get released in cinemas and was like somehow just floating around the internet as this weird spare parts failed experiment, I was constantly blown away by how competent it was and how invested I was becoming. I think like the ticking time bomb element of knowing that they were running out of time to tell the whole story really had me like leaning closer and closer and closer to the screen. I think had I watched it knowing it was an hour and 45 minutes, I might have fallen out of love with Henry. But the whole time I was like, go, yes.
You saw his whole lifespan as well, though.
I know, but like I didn't see the family discovering the book. I didn't see the consequence of what they did on discovering the contents of the book. And the aspersions that Henry was casting on the neighbor. Well, I know I said no spoilers, but as the conversation wears on, I'm now open to the story being revealed through you, Tim, my closest friend and ally.
I'm also your ally. Now, the interesting thing is this is one of those movies where on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got a pretty low score, 22%. We've watched worse. We regularly watch worse. But the IMDb score is 6.6 out of 10. So this is one of those ones where it's like, we can all agree, not like a great film, but I would call it a competent film. And it's kind of like, it's a bit art housey.
It's awards bait kind of movie making.
Exactly. And when it first, the very first thought that went through my head when it started up the kind of intro sequence for the whole film, which I can't even remember what it was now. What was the first thing?
It's once the movie actually starts or the actual intro sequence.
What do you first see on screen?
There are these sort of etchings of these Rube Goldberg style machines. We're turning through the pages of the Book of Henry.
Yeah. So I was like, I bet this was shot on 35mm film. This looks not digital, which I've never made a movie, but I feel like that's what you do when you're chasing awards. You fucking shoot something about a dying kid on film. Anyway,
before we launch into the final third, or you know, the big conflict and resolution of the movie,
yeah,
could I please? I would like to talk to you about the things I was left curious about after my hour of movie making.
I would love to hear what you think happens at the end.
Well,
Walkout Boys. This is turned Walkout Boys.
It is. The impression I got was that, but I'm speculating. I'm speculating as accurately as I can. Cate Blanchett.
By the way, I just want to clear up, because the majority of people won't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Walkout Boys was a very funny podcast where Nick Sampson and Joseph Wall would go see a blockbuster film, but they had to walk out at the halfway point and then guess at what happened in the second half of the movie. It was very good.
So I think Cate Blanchett, first of all, does not show up at all in the movie. Naomi Watts, however, does continue to portray the role of Mother. And there was quite a clearly laid romantic spark between her and the doctor, I thought.
Yep.
So I imagine that they probably get together. There's some sort of conflict around possibly what's going on with the neighbor that pulls them apart, but they ultimately wind up together. What we see is the beginnings of a cohesive family unit between her, the doctor, and the surviving son. I think that... probably the younger brother discovers Henry's book and keeps it to himself and tries to solve the abuse saga that's taking place next door. And at one point, there's doubt cast over his detective work, probably by the doctor maybe, which is the conflict that drives him and Naomi Watts apart. But ultimately, he's proven right and the doctor's very contrite and apologizes. Sarah Silverman might get off the grog. I mean, these are sort of the main things these are the main things I think about. What was left to me was like romantic tension, family situation, and I really wanted to see that neighbor get his comeuppance, because there was something sinister about that man.
Guy, here's what happens in Book of Henry. So the kid dies. Henry dies. So Henry's book is discovered by the mother, and he lays out a plot, as you rightly point out, to get the neighbor. Henry's plot is to kill Hank.
That would explain the trip to the gun shop. I should have probably put that in there. Yes.
Exactly. Yes. So there is a there's a trip to the gun store where he overhears the transaction being made, where he's like, oh, who's the guy? He's like, you know, oh, Dom. He's like, Dominic sent me. The guy's like, I can't sell you a gun. He's like, Dominic sent me. Dominic sends his regards. He's like, all right, I'll go get it, sort of thing. So what Henry does before his untimely death is sets out the details in this book and on an audio recording, which we then see Naomi Watts chuck some earbuds in and listens to, he talks his mum through getting out some cash from an ATM, going into the gun store, saying exactly the right thing to get a very specific sniper rifle with a silencer on it, practice shooting it, and he guides her through like how to shoot this gun in the woods, doing target practice. And then on the night when there's the school like talent show thing,
yeah, that makes sense.
That's the night, because we know that Hank, not his real name, just Hank from Breaking Bad, the bad dad, he didn't want to go. He was like, I can't be bothered going to that. So she knows that he will be there and all of the town will be at the school. So this is the night to do it. So plans every detail meticulously, Henry does, and explains it posthumously through an iPod to his mother. And so she's listening to all these instructions and she's setting up the gun and it all goes through. And then there's this cross cut scene at the end where she's like lining up the shot, waiting for him to get into the sights of the gun, while the daughter who he has been abusing is performs doing a ballet performance.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's all fucking high stress, you know. It's
all, I mean, I can only imagine how interesting this actually is to the our listeners. But to me, this is like gripping, edge of the seat kind of storytelling. I am so invested. This is a new way to watch
a
movie.
I said I was stressed. Yeah. So then. I'm trying to think if I'm like skipping any really important bits. I probably am.
What's Sarah Silverman doing? Anything?
Fuck, man. Do you know, I was really trying to remember when you mentioned Sarah Silverman. I was like, what does end up happening to her? I can't even fucking remember. I don't think
we know
important.
She's a booze hound with a heart of gold and a penchant for mouth kissing precocious young boys.
Yeah, I don't know if she comes back in any series. That's so bad. I watched this yesterday. Man, I've been up since 4 because my dog was vomiting and then I couldn't get back to sleep, so I've been up too early. Anyway, she accidentally, when she's lining up the shot, trips something over in the treehouse because that's where she's hiding to line up the shot, and it sets off one of the Rube Goldberg machines. And I thought
Brilliant.
What was going to...
Caperish and hilarious, I should hope.
I know. The tone of this is so fucking outlandish. It just goes all over. It's like, you know, suddenly we're in a Bourne Identity, you know, spin-off where she's got
a goddamn sniper rifle. But in Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah, in the woods, but we are also inside Pee-wee's Playhouse. So she accidentally triggers that off, which you're sort of, I think, led to believe is going to make so much damn noise that Hank, because, oh, we didn't mention this, Hank is the police commissioner of, like, the whole town that they're in. And at one point earlier in the film, Henry actually calls Child Protective Services or the equivalent to their house because he sees stuff going on and he can't stand just you know, standing by and doing nothing.
Also,
and it turns out,
while we're inside of this insert, he has warned the principal of his school that he thinks there's something untoward happening, but she is an old friend of this of Hank and doubts him, which is what moves him to become frustrated and call child services. And we watch child services arrive at the house through the eyes of the still living Henry at the time.
So did you see the bit where he figures out that the guy who's in charge of Child Protective Services is Hank's brother?
Yeah, because we see in like an iconic scene that is in every single movie starring a child lead, we see him muttering the name of a dastardly adult to himself under his breath. I think it's Sickleman. And it's so perfect delivery. He goes, Sickleman. And you're like,
Sickleman.
Yes. Yeah, of course.
Where are we? The Rube Goldberg machine goes off. It creates a lot of noise, but not enough noise, as it turns out, in the movie to actually get Hank to like draw a weapon and start chasing her, which I thought was what was going to happen. What it does do is it pulls down all these photos of Henry as a baby with his mum, like childhood, you know, baby photos. And so she sees that they like appear on the wall. They kind of fall outward. That's the last bit of the Rube Goldberg machine, which, I mean, you know, we don't need to get into it, but that's fucking dumb. You, like, why have a Rube Goldberg machine that reveals photos you own to you? Very silly. And so she's like, nah, man, I'm not going to kill this guy. That's crazy. And it's like, yeah, you're right. That is fucking wild. And it's nuts that the movie brought us to a point where we were, you had your finger on the trigger and we were all like, well, I guess this is the bit where Henry's mum kills the next door neighbor who's been abusing the child. And that will be our happy ending for this movie.
Is it confirmed that he is abusing the child at this point?
Yes.
How do they confirm that?
I know that you're a real stickler for seeing things transpire on screen, and if you don't see them, you don't believe them. But I mean, it is heavily insinuated.
Beyond that is indeed
the case.
Like, obviously, Henry's precocious, and he's our hero, and so we believe everything he says. But beyond what obvious. Is revealed while he's still alive, it's made yet yes. more obvious still.
It's very obvious. Very obvious.
Yeah, great.
That
great.
He's the baddie. So, so then what happens is she's like, she rings the police? No. The guy, the doctor comes round to the house and like finds her with the gun. I can't remember who rung the police. It's either him or her. She rang them himself, but she's like putting the gun down and kind of, you know, nothing very serious comes of that because she wasn't going to shoot him anyway. So the guy emerged, that love interest doctor dude, he kind of emerges after she's had this critical moment of realizing that shooting the yeah. neighbor would be an insane thing to do.
Great.
And then cop cars show up and then yeah. Hank realizes that, you know, he's done. He's been caught. And you see all these...
How did that happen?
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
What do you mean? How did the cop cars get there?
How did Hank get caught?
Well, because they called the cops and they were like, I think she has this face off with them and she's like, hey, you're fucked. I know what you've been doing and, you know, like, it's over. Now you know who you're dealing with and it's me. And so she kind of, like, falls into the shoes of Henry in terms of being a good Samaritan to actually, you know, take some action
to do
against
something,
him rather than
yeah.
being a bystander. Yeah. So,
yeah, at one point, Henry does very confidently say that violence isn't the worst thing in the world. The worst thing in the world is apathy. And at that point, I'm now imagining
trailer,
you screaming at the computer saying, no, the worst thing in the world is an 11-year-old fucking boy who thinks he knows everything.
Man, I'm like, I admire the qualities and the values that this film is putting forward, but it just inside the vessel of this book, it's not that stuff that bugs me. It's him constantly telling his mum off for like minor shit. It's just like, give it a rest, mate.
That's,
she's doing
her
best.
That is the fun and games part of the movie, where it's like, oh, look at this crazy dynamic. The mum's the son, and the son's the mum.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't play well to me. Anyway, so here's the really wild bit, Guy.
Killing
Guy,
over
it's
here
not done.
In Camp Montgomery. Yeah, I'm fucking listening, brother. Keep
We're not
talking.
Done yet, because the final twist of this film is that Hank steps outside and kills himself. And that is our happy ending.
Did Kate Blanchett and the Doctor kiss?
Kate Blanchett not featured in this movie. Not for a damn second.
Okay, well, what about Naomi Watts?
I don't think they kiss. I should know that. No, it doesn't seem appropriate. I'm pretty sure they didn't kiss at the end.
You know
but
what
I also
else
can't remember what happens to Sarah Silverman. What is happening to my fucking brain?
Do you know what else doesn't seem super appropriate in what I'm assuming was a PGA film?
What?
Is a character killing themselves at the end is the happy ending?
Yeah, man. Yeah, true that. Oh, yeah. The other thing that happens? Okay. I think I just got swept up in the silliness or something. But so Henry's little brother, his entry into the talent show thing that they're doing at school is he's going to do a magic trick. And so he comes on as a magician and he tells the whole room, he said, "Hey, everyone, I'm going to bring my brother back before your very eyes. I'm going to bring him back to this room."
Oh, no.
And everyone's just like, "Oh, no." This kid doesn't realize that his brother has you know, he's passed away and he's not coming back.
He's a goner.
So there's kind of a lot of lead up to that. He's got a box. He says abracadabra, taps it with his wand a few times. You're like, "Oh no, what's going to happen?" And then just a whole bunch of like shaving cream kind of spurts out at the crowd. And that's the ultimate ending. Like slow motion, sort of a confetti type situation. It's pretty wild.
Oh, wow.
What do you think of the hour that you saw though? Like what is your why do you think this movie didn't work? Because it does.
If you watch it and if you watch it under the impression it is only an hour long, you will be absolutely enamored, invested, and engaged the whole time. You will not be able to put your phone down. You will experience this movie as you would any movie that commands your attention, in the sense that the outside world closes off to you and all you want to know is what is happening in the lives of these characters. You will become you'll become stressed when you realize that they're probably not going to have enough time to deal with all of the plot elements that they've introduced. And then in the last sort of 2 minutes, from that 58 minute to that 1 hour mark, you'll think to yourself, okay, maybe the movie hasn't got it wrong here. Maybe I've made some sort of mistake. I ask you, Tim, do you think I'm going to watch the remaining 45 minutes of this movie, even now I know how it plays out after this conversation?
Yeah, I best believe you will. Absolutely.
It's such an interesting thing that's happened to me now, because this movie has vaulted itself from like what would have been just a forgettable Patreon watch to like something which I have a weird investment and connection to.
It's not a wholly terrible film. It's very watchable, and considering the bar of film that we're usually throwing by our pals at Patreon, like this is probably the best movie we've been asked to watch, would you say? Like objectively, in terms of
a movie
being a movie, I think this might be the best film we've been asked to watch.
Yeah, I'm just sort of rifling through what we have seen, and all I'm really remembering is like Breen, Bucky Larson, that weird Christian Christmas movie, and the weird animated
Food Fight.
One. Food Fight.
There's been some great hits there. Fuck, man, I'm trying to read the Variety review out loud, but god damn it, there's a lot of ads getting in my way on the flipping mobile version of this website. Jesus, I cannot access the page for this fucking pop-up quiz it's giving me. Wow, that's annoying. Okay, it's probably going to come back, so I'll try and read this quick. There's the kind of bad movie that just sits there unfolding with grimly predictable monotony. Then there's the kind of Then there's the kind where the badness expands and metastasizes, taking on a jaw-dropping life of its own, pushing through to the ever higher heights of garishness. The Book of Henry, directed by Colin Trevorrow from William Hurwitz's script, is of the latter. You've got to see it to disbelieve it, Variety. The film's muted, yet still rather flamboyant. The fucking quiz came back. God damn it.
Do some variety. Of the quiz.
I can't bring myself to do it. I'm going to skip to something called Common Sense Media, which is coming up very high in Google. So that indicates to me it's of high prestige. They have given this film, kind of hard to see. I think 1 star? Parents need to know that the Book of Henry is a drama with very dark subject matter. A child gets sick and dies. He's shown in a hospital bed with tubes, having seizures, and dying in his mother's arms while family members cry over him. Plus, a boy makes an elaborate plan to commit murder. Sounds crazy in retrospect. And his mother, Naomi Watts, ultimately decides to carry out the plan, going so far as to buy a gun and attempting to shoot her neighbor. A man kills himself off screen. Viewers hear the gunshot. Maybe this is one of those websites where they just like point out all the sort of trigger warnings for parents. Maybe that's why this is no good.
Sounds a bit like what's happening there.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to have one more run at this. And this comes to us from vulture.com. Emily Yashoda. Good stories remind us of who we want to be in Tone Henry.
Yashida. She's a great critic.
Oh, I beg your pardon for the pronunciation. Good stories remind us of who we want to be, intones Henry in a voiceover over the final minutes of the Book of Henry, which raises the question, who in the Book of Henry do you want to be? The 11-year-old genius with tragic illness and a posthumously revealed homicidal streak? The single mother with a first-person shooter addiction? A seemingly bottomless bank account and mad ukulele skills? Or maybe it's the alcoholic waitress who kisses young boys on their lips when their mothers are out of
Thank
the room.
Thank you!
Don't worry, this movie thinks it's cute. By the end of the film, you may just decide you want to be Peter, Henry's younger brother, who mostly just watches the rest of the movie happen around him in a daze, but is adorable. Who doesn't want to be adorable? Such is the cornucopia of characters and scenarios in the Book of Henry. A film written by novelist Greg Hurwitz and directed by Jurassic World's Colin Trevorrow. Seemingly in a vacuum, far, far away from anything vaguely resembling actual things that happen and people who exist. It does not suffice to call the Book of Henry bad. It's non-functional, so poorly conceived from the ground up as to slip out of the grasp of the usual standards one applies to narrative film. It might be admirable if it wasn't such a torture to watch. I could go on, but I think that's a good synopsis of this review.
No, to me, these film critics need to walk a goddamn year in our fucking movie-watching shoes.
Yeah, no and shit, man. This film, by comparison, competent.
All good.
Oh, wow. All good. I go so far as to say, great. This could be Oscar-worthy. Who'd you gravitate towards in this film, man?
I in hearing it spelled out like that, you know, I'm one of those people who I'll read an article and I'll think to myself, yeah, of course, absolutely. And then 2 hours later, I'll read the counterpoint to the article and I'll think, yeah, no doubt. So in hearing those very scathing and articulate reviews, I'm like, yeah, no, this movie does not take place in reality. And I probably am not divorcing the character enough from the performer, but Sarah Silverman sort of, you know, classic white sort of alcoholic quippy waitress character was I was always interested to see her on screen. She's probably the person, I mean, but like she doesn't exist in reality. When they arrive to find her because she didn't show up to her shift at work that morning and she's passed out on her back porch from drinking wine, you know, presumably the night before, and somehow softens Naomi Watts' character enough to sit down and have some wine with her. Her two young boys in tow. You know, you think about that and you're like, none of this makes sense. No, but...
Why do you say that? I think that makes sense.
I don't think... it looks cold. I don't think that she would wake up and be dry and fine after falling asleep outside for the entire night.
Oh, I see. From a medical point of view,
and then also I don't think, you know, like the reaction to that, from that point, you know, all of the responses to that situation are false because it's not coming from a place of truth. But I don't think Kate Blanchett would be like, yeah, sure, I'll just sit down and drink some wine with my clearly alcoholic friend in front of my two boys. Even though we have flipped the mum and son roles, I just thought, no, that's not true. But I was always interested in, seriously, I mean, Bobby Moynihan's character who ran the diner at which...
loved him. Naomi Watts,
and seriously, I loved him, and I was invested in his story because I was like, you need to find better employees, man.
Yeah, dude. You've got to... Yeah, that's true. I think Naomi Watts was... she was a good worker, though. Oh, except actually, when Henry dies, she goes back to work, and there's a... I don't know if you saw this or not, Kai.
I saw this,
Captain
yeah.
Captain fucking 1 hour. When they go... Coke gets Diet delivered
Coke
to the table.
Regular Coke.
Yeah, and so she takes a big old swig out of the glass and she says, yeah, that's regular Coke. No, fuck, she says Diet Coke. That, I remember.
I also remember this stuff.
Doesn't she smoke a cigarette in that bit as well? Or am I imagining? Oh, no, that's when she's baking for the for Peter. She just like starts smoking cigarettes and swearing to Peter.
Yeah. It's, I mean, who did you, what did you, separate from the reviews and my own experience, what did you make of the movie on the whole? Because you did Loved. Tell me it was stressing you out, and you did think that the lead character was an alien. So,
yeah, so I'll tell you when. So when he, okay, so he's got, because I haven't seen it in ages, and now I will never see it because Kevin Spacey has done what he has done. But K-Pax is kind of a vibe I got briefly, and this movie switches gears and genre and tone so many times. I'm like, yeah, fucking maybe he is an alien. Maybe that's what this movie's about. He's been getting these crazy headaches. We know that he is of completely abnormal intelligence for a normal 11-year-old human boy. And then when he's in the hospital getting all the tests and stuff done on him, he runs to the window and tries to open it, and he gets obsessed with like looking out to the sky. And I was like, fuck yeah, this kid's a fucking alien. That rules. Because I thought he was trying to get a bit of a line of sight to his mothership or something, and they were going to beam him back up, you know, like a little gift from heaven above, and they'd take him away again. But, turns out the movie didn't quite have that fantastical sense of imagination, but I sure did.
Well, as you can imagine, going in knowing that this is what you thought, I was also looking out for that stuff. And I did think at the same moment when he looks up, he has to look at the sky, that this kid was possibly... Oh, I still didn't really believe it, but like... His precociousness goes entirely unexplained. This is not like your ordinary child genius, in that this child cannot necessarily exist in reality. Such is his like certainty in his moral values and just like the overwhelming preternatural intelligence he displays across all areas and facets of life. He diagnosed his tumor to the doctor from hearing the symptoms described back to him using the exact medical jargon. He plays the stock market from a payphone as an 11-year-old without a voice modifier to the tune of $660,000. Like in every facet of his life, he is too intelligent to exist in the world as an 11-year-old boy. Surely there is no one who is this intelligent out there.
I don't know. Maybe. At least it wasn't like, what's that Bradley Cooper movie where he gets super intelligent because of that pill? It wasn't to that level, the smart pill.
Yeah, but
you know what I'm talking about?
No, I know, but that sounds fun. At least it's like there's some sci-fi horseshit explanation for why he's being like that. But in this one, we're just meant to believe that this kid is somehow this intelligent. Like when they
he's
took
gifted.
Out the,
he's a
when
gifted
they,
child.
When they took out They're the real. Tumor, before they told him that he had a terminal tumor, I thought they were going to say... We took out what we could of the tumor, and it will impact parts of your brain. And I thought, oh, so now he's just going to have to live as a regular child. I thought that might be the consequence of it. I did not anticipate that he was going to die.
Or swing the other way, and he has to learn a lesson of humility because he becomes disabled after the surgery. That's a good movie.
Well, it's a different movie, isn't it?
It's probably a good movie because I really didn't take to the character. So it's not in a way of like comeuppance, but just in a way of like a lesson learned. I'd be like, this kid was a little shit and then everything was taken away from him. Isn't life fickle? And he's learned it.
You, my friend, are a monster. And I kind of respect you for it. But at least even if they took out the tumor and he did become ordinarily intelligent, at least there'd be some effort at medically qualifying. I know that with some storytelling, it's better not to ask these questions because then the audience starts asking them as well. But his intelligence was too overwhelming to not at least have some basic understanding or throwaway sentence in reference to why it might be that way.
I'm not with you on that, man. I think this is just a gifted kid. They exist. They're rare, but they're out there. Playing the stock market, self-diagnosing gifted? Their tumors. Maybe
like
not
as,
exactly.
As qualified as the like, you know, the best neurosurgeon in the area and as, you know, the best financier.
I hear you. But it's a movie as well. You know, but it wasn't to the point of like, I don't know, I don't know. It wasn't superhuman. It was just very, very, very smart. Especially for an 11-year-old.
The only humanizing element of this young boy, the only thing that made me think maybe he is human, is that I know for a fact when he's on that payphone making, you know, decisions about the stock market, do you know who's on the other end of that phone line?
Who's that?
My friend and yours, financier John James Preston.
Oh, do you reckon? That's so weird because I thought you were going to say, old mate from We Are Your Friends,
Paige?
God, yes, dude. Paige is on the other end taking those transactions.
Fuck.
Imagine. Isn't that what they were doing in there? Like penny stocks and stuff?
A three-headed investment fund spearheaded by the triple-headed monster that is Henry, Mr. Big, and Paige from We Are Your Friends.
Trinity Finance.
Oh, man.
Be unstoppable. Can we just, I know we've talked about it a little bit, but get into this kiss thing? Because it's got shades of Big to it. You know in Big with Tom Hanks where the full-grown adult woman, like, hooks up with a boy who's in a man's body?
I've not seen Big, but I'm imagining from your description that the full-grown adult woman is aware that it is a boy that she's kissing.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think she's doing it full knowing. And there's no escaping even a lush, like, Sarah Silverman's character in this film. Like, I mean, he doesn't look old. He looks 11. He's 11 and he looks 11. And he's on, we now know, his deathbed. And to give him an open-mouth kiss, I mean, I don't know what the movie's trying to sort of do for us I get the whole feeling of he's going to die a virgin sort of thing. Like, he's going to die having never been kissed, so we've got to give him this one kiss. But they've already set up a romantic interest for him, which is the appropriately aged next-door neighbor. But then they, I guess, have complicated that by putting her in an abusive relationship with her stepdad. So for her to give him a kiss might be a bit complicated. But I think no more complicated than a fucking drunk 36-year-old buxom Sarah Silverman pashing him. So yeah. I don't know. Pick your poison. I think they should have throwing the little girl at him.
I don't know that he needed to kiss anyone.
Rite of passage. Like it's a coming-of-age film, in addition to all the other movies this is.
I don't even think he was trying to seduce Sarah Silverman. He was just saying to her, like, he was just explaining in scientific terms, you know, using the appropriate language, qualifying what their relationship is to each other, which is pretty much a slightly more articulate version of the playground, I'm mean to you because I like you.
Exactly.
And he calls her pretty. But, you know, an 11-year-old can call a 36-year-old pretty without trying to seduce them.
This is the real question the movie poses. But I'm gutted that you, and I know you'll see it now, but I am gutted that you haven't seen Naomi Watts become an assassin. And they dress her like an assassin clothes. She's all in black and shit. Well, it's wild,
do you
man.
Know, I'm frustrated to think when I was speculating about the second half of the film, I missed both of the delightful Henry's guns of Naomi Watts always playing first-person shooter games and... Mm. Henry going to... Well, actually, I missed the talent show as a qualifier. I missed the gun shop and the meaning that would have, like, the significance that would take on. And Naomi Watts's addiction to first-person shooters. I tell you what else I actually really missed was the presence of Cate Blanchett at all in this movie. But that's how they make him. That's all you can do. All you can do is watch him how they make him and curb the last 45 minutes of screen time.
Not since Paddington 2 has such beautiful and symmetrical storytelling opened so many boxes and later closed all of those boxes so skillfully.
We have a lot of fun, don't we?
This is the tricky thing about bad movies, though, folks. They're hard to trust. So when you get thrown information, you don't know where to put it. You're like, is this a clue as to what will happen later in the movie, or is this unneeded exposition handed to me by an unskillful filmmaker? And that's why I don't think you need to feel too bad about it, Guy. Completely understandable that you would see Henry go into a gun shop and just chalk it up to, well, I guess this is just a thing the movie's throwing at me. Or Naomi Watts' character being addicted to first-person shooters on console. It's just like, yeah, okay, I guess this is their version of a three-dimensional single mum is having a PlayStation. You know? I get it. Because the movie's weird, hard to trust. But it turns out, puts it all back in. This movie, Book of the Henry... From me, 3 stars, and I'm not even being facetious.
Man, it's impossible for anyone listening to this podcast to watch the movie as I just did, but to anyone who watches The Book of Henry under the impression it's an hour-long film and is worried about how they're going to resolve all the story, and then later finds out through talking to a close friend who has watched the whole film exactly how batshit it does go, I mean, this is a 5-star movie-watching experience for me.
Brilliant. I think our first 5-star in the Patreon palace. That's fucking one for the books, everyone. The books of Henry.
So thank you so much. Please vote for Tiptoes for our next... I know that I probably... it's probably illegal for me to get in and meddle with the next election, but my God, that trailer has whet my appetite for that movie in ways I cannot describe. Maybe we could watch it in our leisure time.
Maybe we could. And also, in our leisure time, we will be heading stateside. Guy already is. He's in New York City right now as we speak, and I will be joining him. We've got a show in New York City at Littlefield, and that's on the 20th.
I know. Do you want me to say?
Please.
It's on the 23rd of June, Sunday the 23rd of June. The next night at Sleeping Village in Chicago, Monday, June 24th, we also have a live show. And later that week, on Wednesday, June 26th, at the Clinton Street Theatre in Portland, and on Friday, June 28th, in Los Angeles, California, at the Dynasty Typewriter. If you are in or near those places, or know anyone who listens along who is, please buy a ticket, come on down, visit the boys, we'll have
Here's
a good
thing.
Time.
The places that we've selected to go into are all fucking dope, and they're kind of like... slightly smaller venues. They're all like around sort of 100 to 150 seaters. So we got to sell these puppies out. Please come, bring a friend, and you will be treated to not only a live show as we end this season. And I don't know what we're doing after this. Not only that, but you'll be treated
for a long time, a
piece of media, 26 minutes in length from memory, that Guy and I made, which we are legally prohibited from showing in other circumstances. Maybe
True
even
that.
The ones in which we're showing it. So we'll see you there. littleempirepodcast.com/live. Thank you so much to all of our Patreon pals. We will see you very soon when we endeavor to finish watching Sex and the City 52 times.
Thank you and God bless.
No matter what, don't panic.
I'm not panicking.
We have to make it better.
To this Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.